Views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hronco Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hronco Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the DC movement should be referred to Hronco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 blah. So which time you will be told to shut up. On behalf of Hronco Radio Network,
I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you. Ha, 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 ha.
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way, then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I've heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories.
Ladies and gentlemen, this time it's Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And we got some topics tonight that are definitely going to concern your digestion, folks. You're going to love it. It's, what a week, what a weekend. I got to dive right into this stuff, folks. Lots and lots of things to talk about. A few things to catch up on over the past week. Crazy week going on here. But life is good. No doubt about it. But anyway, folks, I got to open. You're going to love this. This down off of the Reuters network here tonight. Seal meat to be on menu at the Canadian Parliament. Canada's parliamentary restaurant will be serving seal meat on Wednesday in a gesture of defiance aimed at a European Union ban on imports of seal products. Canada's conservative government says it will fight the EU ban, which was imposed last July on the grounds that the annual seal hunt off the East Coast was cruel and inhumane. A dish of double-smoked bacon, bacon-wrapped seal loin in a port reduction, will be on the menu on Wednesday, the office of Senator Céline Harvieu-Payette said today. All political parties will have the opportunity to demonstrate to the international community the solidarity of the Canadian Parliament behind those who earn a living from the seal hunt, she said in a statement. Ottawa says the hunt, which takes place in March and April, provides valuable income for Atlantic fishing communities. The seals are either shot or hit over the head with a spiked club called a hakapik. An aide to Harvieu-Payette said that, depending on supplies, seal meat could be available once a week when in season. Wow. Now, I can just see tomorrow it's going to be nuts. Canada defending the clubbing of baby seals. How you doing there, Lone Gunman? Welcome to the room. We are broadcasting tonight over Hernco.com. You can find us at Hernco.com/cafe/index.htm. Folks, I can't get over this. And I had to bring this up tonight because it made me think about this. Because nobody south of the border in the lower 48 is going to sit here and say that they condone these guys walking around on the ice clubbing baby seals over the head. And I don't want anybody to get the idea that I think that either. However, given that that's said, I know I'm broadcasting to a lot of hunters out there tonight, and I'm a hunter too. Grant you, not a good hunter, a very poor hunter, as a matter of fact. I'm just one of them kind of guys that gets out in the woods. And, you know, look, I'll tell you something. When you're hunting for deer, especially with a bow, the way I usually have, you know, it's very important that you get out there, you become one with whatever it is that you're hiding in, your tree stand, and that you sit up there and you make absolutely no noise whatsoever. You stay perfectly do, you know. You don't cough, you don't sneeze, you don't fart, you don't smoke, you don't do anything at all whatsoever to lead anybody to believe you're up there. Which means you get yourself into an alert state of total repose. Well, I always have a problem with the alert state of total repose. I'm good for about a half an hour, and half an hour into it, I fall asleep. And the deer just go walking on by. But that being said, you know, we hunt deer up here. There's no doubt about it. All right, and whether you consider it humane or otherwise, or all you PETA people out there, I know you're all having fits. But it's, look, the deer hunt here is a regular source of protein for us. There's no doubt about it. We all eat the deer meat here. The deer meat happens to be tastier than the cow meat. Any day of the week, I will take venison over the beef here. And I don't care how much you're spending on your cut of beef. The deer meat here just tastes better. Now, it's not like Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania are gamier than hell. Make no doubt about it. You know, and I'm sorry if all you fine folks down in Pennsylvania who do a lot of deer hunting, especially members of my own family who are cursing me for this right now, but the deer down there are just nasty. They taste nasty. The deer up here, better than the beef, you know. At any rate, that being said, this is part of their diet, part of these Atlantic fishing communities. You know, now I would be kind of curious and interested to see, you know, how they're pulling it off. How their seal community is managed. You know, I mean, you got to take a look at something here, folks. You know, killing a certain amount of a certain species at certain times of the year can increase the herd size. You know, we've proven that. We've proven that all over the Northeast here, and including states like Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Connecticut, all throughout the New England and Middle Atlantic states, and out in the Midwest too, I'm sure. You know, I'm not as aware of the deer hunting out there, but up here, it's another story. I mean, through the management of deer herds, which basically means in the rutting season, we go out and we shoot all the young stupid bucks, and, you know, the smart bucks get to breed. Next crop, next season, you know, when they're not being hunted, they're allowed to raise up a whole crop of young deer. And each generation gets stronger and stronger. And, you know, and you get tons of females. You know, tons and tons and tons of females. And you get tons and tons of deer. They say now this year, maybe the deer, I think, they told me this year, a lot of the guys said the deer herd was off this year. But nonetheless, there are still more deer here now than there ever were when Indians lived here. You know, it's I'll bet they do from Virginia, because it's, you know, it might have something to do with the southern thing or whatever the hell it is they're eating. Like up here, they get a lot of acorns and a lot of corn, you know, a lot of corn growing around here. I don't know why that's the predominant grain or whatever that they grow here, but that's the big one. But the deer are well fed and are far tastier. But, you know, you got to get back to this. Got to think about these people up in the Atlantic seacoast who make their living off of hunting seals. Now, evidently, they're only doing this a couple times a month. But think about this, folks. Think about this. You know, the Canadians are, in defiance of an EU ban on seal products, serving it in their restaurants. So I can't wait to see. I can't wait to see what's going to be happening tomorrow. PETA has got to go nuts tomorrow. I can't wait to see whether or not the U.S. government is going to stick its nose into this and say anything whatsoever. What else could happen there? All right, now I'll tell you though, folks. There are a lot of things coming out of our government right now that's pretty much getting me bothered up here. But I don't think that it's worth getting upset over. I really don't. I think this is one of those points in time where we just got to sit back, got to trust things, make phone calls, obviously, to your congressman and whatnot, get your voice heard. But don't get upset. These people are pushing very, very hard right now. Now, you notice over the past few weeks here, a lot of talk about how health insurance has gone up. Gone way up. Hey, wait a minute. I'm not going to get into this. Damon, I was talking about food, and I wanted to talk about food first. Here, I'm rummaging through the pile, and I just skipped right over it. Now, listen, I got to, folks, hey, long-time listeners here know my buddy Mr. Flute from Down Under, the great land of Australia, is on board here tonight. And he's actually got a couple of scientific breakthroughs that have come through out of Australia, and the first one here, I think, is very, very interesting. And actually, I'm going to call him up to the mic and let him talk to you about it a little bit. And then I got a few questions for you, Mr. Flute. It's definitely got a few questions for you about this, and maybe a point or two to ponder. But go ahead, tell us about the first one there, but the canola oil.
Yeah, what Australian scientists have managed to do is manage to marry up algae and the canola plant. Now, The canola plants naturally produce omega-3s and omega-6s, but in fairly small amounts. What they've managed to do is, as I said, genetically modify, or I don't know if they put them in a dark room or how they did it, but they've crossed these two plants and taken the algae's ability to grow long-strand omega-3 fatty acids, which are good for it, into the canola grain. So that we are looking forward to a time whereby we can actually specifically feed farmed fish, which is one of the holy grails of the future world, without having to rely upon maritime sardine stocks, which are caught and obviously pulped and mashed, and fish oil. Now, fish oil is now in demand not only as a stock supplement, but as a human supplement. So it'll be one of those things, if we can do this, and it's pretty clear that they can, they're up to the point now whereby they can human test for reactions, and the Australian government's pretty careful with anything like this. But we can probably see the first plants out in the field in about 5 years, and then a rapid growth after that. Now, the Australian government has, I think, for nearly 80 of its 100 years, we've had our Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation. The acronym is CSIRO, and it's called CSIRO. Now, CSIRO has always been at the forefront of scientifically of things that matter to Australia. So they did remarkable research into sheep and wool genetics over most of that time, into wheat genetics. But now it's working on something else, and this canola thing, it will be a breakthrough for fried foods. I'm looking forward to that day in the near future whereby we can, by say, eating bread with oil in it, or cooking with canola oil or canola margarine, that it's going to be the equivalent of, say, eating a portion of Atlantic salmon. Now, it won't replace fish, but if we can feed fish food that's high in omega-3s, we can farm fish like salmon, which the world is familiar with, even prawns, that are also very high in omega-3 fatty acids, which, if you want good salmon, it's the wild fish. The farm fish to date hasn't quite produced the same amount of omega-3 benefits that the wild fish has. Well, we should very soon be able to do it. Now, already some of this canola production, I think, is headed towards the fish and stock food industry. Not for human consumption just yet, but for trials. So, exciting times. Back to you, Mark.
You know they're going to be making cat food out of it, though. no doubt about it. They will feed it to your cats. Now, it's interesting. Yeah, I've read that article there that you handed me real quick. And they state there that generally the long chains of fatty acids that need to be built up to get your omega-3s require the little fish getting eaten by bigger fish, and so that these long chains could build up. You know, and I see exactly where you're coming from there. But so it's interesting, and I think that farming, or what they call aquaculture here, which I'd never thought about it quite that way, the oceans is going to be the future. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it in my mind whatsoever. I've seen a couple of really neat ideas out there. As a matter of fact, the Spanish are doing something very crazy. They have large floating seines. It's a huge net that's made out of whatever, but it just floats out in the ocean. And they tend it with a couple of boats, and they feed them pellets that are basically made from ground-up garbage. But it's all sea bass. And, they're raising sea bass for the market there. You know, so I can see what's going on here with this. This way they'll be able to raise these farmed fish with pellets made out with the canola oil that'll have those fatty or those omega-3 fatty acids in there. So very, very cool. Very, very cool. Now, here's a question I got for you. I'm looking at this politics-wise. You know, now, did they do any genetic engineering to get to this point? And if they have, let me ask you a couple of questions here. Do you think there's a chance that this genetic engineering might escape into the wild? And if it does, and other people start to harvest it, is this company Syro going to be able to come down on them for royalties and whatnot? Because what I understand, now over here, one of the biggest bugaboos of the left in this country is a huge corporation called Monsanto. Now, there are lots of claims that go back and forth about what Monsanto's done. Like they have grown corn where the pollen from that corn is blown into neighboring fields, and they basically just came along and claimed all the corn off of that field. And through legal processes, whatever, sometimes managed to get that corn. Now, according to their website, they've settled all of these claims, and that there's nothing outstanding, and that most of what you hear out there is a hoax. Who knows, one way or another. But my point is this, where is Syro's position on this, you know? Can this stuff escape into the environment? Is it something that somebody else can steal from them? Is it something that's going to be real easy to do? What is it going down here? Because, what you're saying here is this Commonwealth Scientific Research. This is a 50-50 shot with the government and private industry. You know, now that's something that Americans have always looked askance at, is a government tied up with private industry. Although we got tons of lefties out there that engage themselves in it on a daily basis. So I'd like to know what the political ramifications are. If this company's ever been involved in anything like that, or what they're looking at for the future.
Well, I went to a primary school. There were six of us in a class. There were three boys and three girls, and one of the three boys that I started school with is a leading quantitative geneticist with Syro. And I asked him this very question. One about the genetic modification. He had said it's the way of the future. He said under natural selection, which is how we used to develop plants, they may have been able to achieve the same results in 100 years of specific line breeding, which is how we got some of our corn and some of our grains now. He said these days they can jump the fence with their gene shears, which are an Australian invention as well, cut the relevant gene out of another plant and stick it into the plant they want to develop and start the testing there. Now, Monsanto is one of the bugaboos because of their I'm trying to find a word to explain, because of their litigious behaviour, and it's not appreciated through much of the world, and one of the byproducts of this, of what Monsanto did particularly with corn, is Monsanto pollen has managed to infect nearly all of the wild corn in Mexico. So you and I can't go to Mexico now, dig up a little wee wild corn plant and take it back to the lab and research it without crawling all over the Monsanto gene that's stuck in it. So that's one of the downsides of that. But going back to my friend John, I'd said to him, what about the commercialisation of stuff that CSIRO developed? And he said, well, the government actually owns that research and can and does sell it to the highest bidder, or it does sell it. CSIRO is a profit-making organisation. Now, if it breaks even, everybody feels pretty happy. But he said a lot of the scientists are smart enough to leave a keyhole in their research, and you understand. Maybe it was always said that software programmers always left themselves access to their own software. And my friend explained to me that that scientists do the same thing. So he said, or what happens is the scientists will resign from government research and join a private company. At the moment, my friend, I haven't spoken to him for a few months, so I won't name him as a source, but he runs the World Pinus Radiata database, which is pretty much a North American thing. He also runs the World Hereford stud book, which is fairly North American and Canadian, the World Anger Stud Book, and amongst other projects. He's quite happy with genetic modification. He'd always explained that if plumbers could do this, he said you could finish up with some bad things out there. He said they can't. The people that can achieve this genetic modification are in fact scientists, and he said they're all very well educated and pretty responsible people that he knew. So it's just an interesting little look at, as you say, it's an exciting project with ramifications for people and animals worldwide. How will it affect other canola type plants, which are brassicas? You know, will it affect cabbage? Will it affect sugar beet? Or can it infect bok choy and all of these other brassica type plants that we grow? And he said, and I'd ask him again a similar question, and he said, well, not particularly. Now they know that if they want the genes to replicate, they want it to replicate within the seed and sort of not quite within the pollen. But I'll give you a downside to Monsanto. We've all heard about CCD. It's called colony collapse disorder, which has affected bees across the US and Europe. Well, it's very much tied to a Monsanto product called Gaucho, is its proprietary name. And this is one of these products that's like a natural insecticide that you dip the seeds in when you plant it, so that the plant can get away to a good start. Well, Monsanto has long, and the Germans have been after them, long said that this can't be associated with bees. And apparently there's a number there, at under 0.00000, whatever squillion parts per billion, this isn't fatal to bees. But finally Monsanto admitted that it can confuse bees. So just because I give you a drink, if it doesn't kill you, it doesn't mean it's safe. You know, if you come back with half a brain and you can't talk, then you wouldn't consider that safe. So this is a Monsanto product which has now been banned across a lot of the globe. Surprisingly, not in Australia, which at the moment is the world's repository for bees. I know I'm rambling a bit here, but there is a big industry whereby Australian apiarists shake their hives. It's when you pick up the frames and you drop a heap of bees in a little box. They look like one of those Chinese takeaway food boxes. I think they hold about a pound of bees. They shake them into that and send them off every year to the United States for pollinisation. It's quite a big industry, and here we have people in Australia are now starting to use this Gaucho, which has been proved in Europe that it causes bees to become disoriented. It can build up in the plants and build up in the bees, cause them to become disoriented, and so they can't get back to the hive. Imagine having racing pigeons that couldn't find their way home. Anyway, that's enough of my babble for the moment. I'll hand back to our host, Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Flute. Yeah, you know, it makes me wonder. There was a ban on all genetically modified foods from different countries. Remember, we tried to send some in aid to Africa, and they turned around and said, no, we don't want that. You know, I'm trying to think of what other African countries. A couple of years back that this happened, but I'm wondering if it wasn't, you know, something in retort of other things that Monsanto had done, rather than just, an outright ban on something they didn't understand. You know, genetically modified foods. Because in the end, it's food. You know? Yeah, to Zambia. I wanted to say Zimbabwe, but I didn't think that was correct. But it's, it was good for one crop. Well, you know, there are... You know, you were talking about how it comes down through genetic modification over the years. And a lot of things, and wheat and things like that, had already done that. The early Romans had actually developed a triticale, which was a fourth or fifth generation of genetic modification on wheat. But it was, the thing about it is, it's, in the end, it's food. You know what I mean? Look, when something hits your stomach, it grinds your stomach. You know, the acids in your stomach reduce things basically down to their component parts. You know, now, I don't care how you put the component parts together with genetic modification. The juices in your stomach break it down to to where it's done. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Wheat and rye, triticale. So there's, you know, it's just one of them kind of grains that'll bring stuff out. I mean, you can buy, I've seen pasta made out of it. You know, it's, not that it was any good, but it was, I saw it. It was, they were bragging about it on the box. but it makes you wonder. It makes you wonder about a lot of stuff that goes that way. You know, with these genetic foods, you know, why people are so, you know, offset about not eating it. You know, because I can imagine, like, I look at things in this country. You look at strawberries, for example. You know, the bigger the strawberry, you know, the more we like them. But those big ones, they only come through really serious cultivation. And I had a friend of mine tell me that all strawberry plants are exactly the same genetically. He says, you know, what happens from there is just how well you cultivate them. It's just, you know, how well you fertilize them, how well, you know, they get watered, if, whether they're getting the right amount of sunlight, blah, 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 blah. He said, but you can take it with any of them and get the biggest. But still, you look at the ones that are really, really huge. You think, how did they get to that? And, you know, what's your next thought of how did they get to be that big? You pop it in your mouth and you eat it. You know? Because that's what strawberries are for. It's what any of them, you know, even the big blueberries and stuff that we're getting nowadays. All right. Now, well, folks, I got a lot more stuff to go on to here in the second half hour of the show. But I do got to take a break. We are at the bottom of the hour. You are listening to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. Folks, we'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start chopping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-yah!
The Karate Glove chops through anything. Just put it on and instantly chop through wood, concrete, brick walls, trees, small cars. It can even chop through these 8 guitars. It chops things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
That's the sound of your classmate receiving an attachment of you posing in your underwear. Your ex-boyfriend forwarding the picture to his friends. It being sent to your coach. And worst of all, your dad. All because of the time you posted those pictures on your profile. Anything you post online, anyone can see. So think before you post. For more information, visit www.cybertipline.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. And you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's
great. Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncoat.com. All right, folks, going on. The nuttiness that I was talking about at the top of the hour here. The craziness that is reigning supreme throughout Washington is, once again, health care. Gotta love it. Gotta just plain love everything that is going on with the whole health care scenario. A few articles come down off of... where we got this one here tonight? This one could be a Reuters story. Yeah. You gotta. Now, folks, I'm here to tell you before I even get into this article. greatest hoax in the world is being perpetuated. I've been talking about this healthcare scenario, and I am amazed at all the people out there, including a lot of my fellow conservative talk show hosts who just don't get it. And I'm pointing out especially to Rush Limbaugh here today. Hope somebody passes this show along to him. You know, once again, making excuses for the insurance companies. Yes, Rush, you heard it. I am a conservative. Now, look, I'm not here to condemn all insurance companies. Never have been. But there are a few, the biggest ones out there, that are moving into a position of monopolizing the entire industry. That is what is going on with healthcare in this country. Make no mistake about it. And this monopoly that they are trying to form for themselves, this conglomerate monopoly, is just unbelievable. Where they are going with this is trying to form a monopoly that will be regulated basically by the government. I don't know if I'm even using the right word. It's going to be created by the government. We'll have the power of government to back up its monopoly and to force every American to do business with it. Now, if this isn't tyranny, I don't know what is. There is no such thing as tyranny if this isn't it. Make no mistake about it. You are locking up one entire industry, bringing it in under your umbrella, and forcing out all of your competitors. You are monopolizing an industry. You are breaking antitrust laws. You are doing the wrong thing. Now, what we got coming down off of here tonight, what we've been hearing in the news, and let me start with this one right off of Reuters right here. President Barack Obama launched a sharp attack on health insurers today and called on his fellow Democrats to rise above politics and pass a health care overhaul bill in the next few weeks. Hitting the road to rally support in the final push for health care reform, Obama used a campaign-style speech to urge Democrats to approve a bill and quickly eye the end of political wrangling that has consumed Washington since July. There have been plenty of folks in Washington who said that the politics is just too hard. They've argued now is not the time for reform, Obama said at Arcadia University in Glenside, Pennsylvania. My question to them is, when is the right time? If not now, when? He asked, shrugging off warnings of a political backlash in November for Democrats who backed the overhaul. I don't know how passing health care will play politically, but I do know that it's the right thing to do. Now, then this one goes on and on and on. But he comes on and he's condemning the insurance companies. These insurance companies have made a calculation, Obama said. They're okay with people being priced out of health insurance because they'll make more by raising premiums on the customers they keep. Now, that is just an ass-backwards statement right there, Mr. Obama, okay? You don't make more money by raising premiums on customers that you keep while throwing away some customers. Doesn't work that way. No. The idea is to get as many customers as you possibly can. That is how you make more money. Any business will tell you that. Anywhere in the world. All right? But he goes on and on. He is just bitching about insurance companies. Of course, a lot of the big reason here that it's helping him back up moves by the insurance companies themselves, raising their rates from anywhere from 13% in some states all the way up to 40% in the state of California. The health care premiums for some of the best plans have gone way up. And a lot of your middle-class plans here have gone all the way up. Plans where people are allowed to buy a little bit less, try to save some money, but still get some decent coverage if they need it, are also going up. And what's going on here, folks, is a push by these same insurance companies to force you into calling your senator and or your congressman and get this bill passed because they want this bill. That is the big deception that is going on out there. These big-ass companies that want to take over and monopolize the entire market are pushing you harder and harder and harder. They're playing both ends against the middle. Now, I'm here to tell you that, look, I'm sorry, you can't be the smartest man in the world, a.k.a. the President of the United States, and not know what the insurance companies are up to. You couldn't have sat in on that dinner at the Democratic National Convention. You remember that one that I'm going to keep going back to where the reporters were all thrown out of there, where the press was not allowed, where that ABC reporter got beat down out in front of the place? Well, you folks at best understand, we know. We can see this. We can understand what the hell is going on out there. We see what these insurance companies are doing. All right, make no mistake about it. AIG's bailout was just part of it. We understand that the American Insurance Group underwrites so much of the other insurance policies that are out there, including health insurance. All right? We know what's going down here. But to get the power of government to make sure that you have profits on a forever and ever basis, I'm sorry, that doesn't work. To get your companies made basically somewhere down the line a department of the government and have the power of the IRS to enforce making sure that you get paid, now that just doesn't flush with a lot of Americans. It certainly doesn't flush with this American. But it's coming at us from all different directions here, folks. We also got it coming at us from Kathleen Sebelius this week. And I got her sitting right up on here too. This is a dandy. Now, according to Health Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, said the health care reform would have been dead on arrival if the White House had sent a finished proposal to Congress last year. The Secretary also blamed delays in passing the measure on President Barack Obama, having to spend far too much time talking about what's not in the bill and trying to counter wild accusations by Republicans. Under a new push to get the measure through Congress, Obama set a March 18 deadline for the House to pass the Senate version of the legislation before he leaves on a trip to Asia. Sebelius said she thought the decline would hold, the deadline would hold, but indicated the president would not walk away from the key agenda item of his presidency should the House not act by then. She said Obama still hoped for some Republican votes on the health care bill, but I'm not sure there will be. You better believe there won't be. The fundamental conflict, she said, centers on Republican beliefs that insurance companies should have less regulation than they do now, less consumer protection, less oversight, and blah, 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 blah. Now, fact of the matter is, what do the Republicans come back with? Well, they're arguing that the Obama plan amounts to a government takeover of the U.S. healthcare industry and would increase an already burgeoning budget deficit. Well, yeah, well, that's the truth, see. And this is what they're trying to avoid here, you know. She sits here and just makes a bold lie. I mean, you got to look at it this way. You know, when she comes out and says that, I'm coming right up here to quote this one. The wild accusations by Republicans and far too much time talking about what's not in the bill. Excuse me, Miss Kathleen Sebelius, either you have not read the bill, or if you have read the bill, you know damn well you are lying through your teeth. That's all there is to it. This is just plain wrong, and I can't believe that this administration doesn't understand what's going on down here. I just can't. I'm sorry. You can't sit up there and tell me that this guy is one of the smartest people in the world and has no idea what it is that he's walking around this country talking about. No, this has got to be complete insanity. It's completely insane to see what will come down with this health care bill. You know, it's the qualified health benefit providers. Chris, I did a 6-hour show on this, folks, and it kills you. But the ramifications of what will happen that comes down with this are just unbelievable. You will be putting your health care into the hands of maybe 4 or 5 of the largest insurance companies out there, which I guarantee are already in cahoots with each other, because I guarantee you that they're sharing the same underwriters. Okay? That's the way insurance works. Insurance works off of underwriters. You think you're buying a plan from an insurance company? Well, you are, but they're buying a plan against your plan. That's how that works. Works all that way every time. The underwriters, that they make some money not only off the profit of the plan that you're selling them, but the profit of the underwriting too. You know, they get the, you know, don't forget, when they sell that underwriting, it's probably going to get a discount rate. You know, stop and think about that, folks, which way they're making it, which way it's going. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't have any company, probably any company out there that wants to do this on a level playing field through honest measures. You know, but when you go into governments around the country and you start lobbying these governments to make your company the exclusive provider because you're the only one that has the capability to put this together, or you get your company lobbied into it because it's such a need, you know, and all of a sudden your state has to make mandates to make sure that need gets covered, well, then you got a problem, because the needs out there should be determined by you, not by your state or not by any other government agency. You know, it's just insane what is going on out there. Now, I think the states are all looking at this as well. Maybe we can just wash our hands of it all together and throw it into the lap of the federal government. Think of all the relief on our budgets that that's going to do. And that's going to be your next thing here. So, folks, you know, we're getting it from every which direction here. The Democrats are holding up the Republicans as being the total evil guys on this. They're also holding up the insurance companies. And on top of that, the insurance companies are raising your rates. I'm sorry, folks, but I see a triple push here going for this. What really makes me wonder is why they're pushing so damn hard for it now, why they aren't trying to worm their way into it with even more and more and more propaganda, more scenes on the TV, more, you know, more times of people who are living in the streets and can't get health insurance, more people that are dying in the hospital doors. You know, hey, you got to think one of two things here. You know, either they don't think they need it, or they can't find it. You know, which is probably more likely. Yeah, I'm sure you get a few people out in the world that are always going to fall through the cracks, even in this country. There's some people out there that you're going to offer help to that don't want your help. Go on living exactly how they are, you know, despite the fact that they own absolutely nothing. You know, if you feel for these people, hey, go help them out. There are millions and millions of organizations out there that you can join up and help them out to, you know, so you feel soul satisfied. And leave me alone, and I'll do the same exact thing. But the point of the matter is here, folks, when they're preying on your heartfelt feelings, when they're preying on your emotions, you are still being made prey. You've got to understand that. You've got to understand, just follow the money, follow where it's all going. Take a look at the healthcare bill, see what happens to an insurance company that managed to get itself in on the deal here, one that manages to become a qualified health benefit provider. Hey, you don't have to worry about taking on anybody, even with pre-existing conditions, because you know full well if your insurance company loses money that year, it's going to get reimbursed by our taxes. And what, of course, taxes are going to have to go up for that, won't they? No, they won't. They'll just keep borrowing it and running the debt up until the point in time will come where your dollar isn't worth a goddamn thing. So the Democrats win here, any way you look at it, if this health care bill goes through. So I'm talking this, though, folks. They are... Well, on top of all this, now let me get back here. I'm confusing myself at this point in time. But the point that I'm trying to make is this. We've got a triple attack going on out here. These people are really pushing hard for this whole health care bill. And they're trying to ram it down our throats, make no doubt about it. Oh, this reminds me, anybody hear about Mr. Massa up in New York State today? Of course, this was all over the news. But resigned from Congress, a Democrat, operating in a mostly Republican district, or a conservative district, they say, walked out in disgust, talked about all kinds, talked about getting threats from Rahm Emanuel about not going along with everything here. Sick and tired of the way the politics work down there, resigned his position in Congress. Let's see who it is that goes, takes over his spot. I think you're going to see a lot more and more and more of this, because the thuggery that's coming down from the top here, at least reported by Mr. Massa, isn't taking too well on the Hill. I can't imagine how many of the people are actually succumbing to this, but evidently there are. All right, coming on and on and on here. Where was the next one? I had a couple more here in the list. Yeah, more on healthcare. Yep. Selling his reform plan. No, that isn't going to work. No. Where the hell? Here we go. There we go. I knew I had something over there. Now, Iran. Back in the news. I told you folks I'm going to keep on top of this. U.S. lawmakers pushed today to punish firms that do business with Iran in defiance of U.S. sanctions, angry over a report that Washington awarded such companies roughly $107 billion. Awarded them. Now, let's get to this. Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand called for immediate passage of a pending bill that could deny U.S. government contracts to companies that provide Iran with gasoline or invest in the Islamic Republic's energy sector. Gillibrand, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, also backed imposing a 3-year ban on government contracts for companies that falsely claim they do not do business with Iran's refined petroleum sector. We need to send a strong, clear signal to Iran that until it halts its nuclear ambitions, the dangerous state will be denied the benefits of access to the global economy, she said in a statement. Company offenders whose profits serve to fuel Iran's nuclear ambitions should not be allowed to do business with the U.S., period, she said. Her comments came after the New York Times reported late Saturday that Washington has awarded more than $107 billion in payments to foreign and U.S. companies doing business in Iran despite U.S. sanctions. That sum included nearly $15 billion paid to companies that defied U.S. sanctions law by making large investments that helped Iran develop this vast oil and gas reserve, said the paper. In another response to the report, 9 U.S. representatives pushed for toughening a 1996 law aimed at punishing companies that invest in Iran's energy sector, noting that it has never led to sanctions on any company. The U.S. government should be enforcing the Iran Sanctions Act, not rewarding firms that violate it, said Republican Representative Mark Kirk. Kirk and Democratic Representative Ron Klein unveiled a bill to toughen the Iran Sanctions Act, requiring President Obama's administration to investigate potential violators of the act and notify Congress of known offenders. The 1996 law authorizes sanctions against U.S. non-U.S. companies that invest more than $20 million in Iran's oil and gas sectors. All right, I don't have to go on and on, read the whole article here to you folks, but back in the news once again. Looks like they're still kind of playing ball on the edges here. And this is okay. This is okay, the way I see it. You know, once again, a lot of people out there calling for it's time to go and attack Iran before they get a bomb, blah, 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 blah. But I think Iran's going to go down ahead of time. I really do. It's going to go down for the count. These sanctions and whatnot here that are only going to serve more to hurt the people. And the people are already protesting Iran very, very hard. They're going to get down. They're going to get down. There ain't going to be no need for us to go in there and bomb a damn thing. I think the Israelis see this also, which is why they have not done anything. Remember 2 weeks ago on here we reported about the 10 new sites where they will be enriching uranium, you know, which were conveniently put like out in the mountains far away from any of the populated areas down there in Iran. It was pretty amazing. You knew damn well what was going to happen. They were going to tow some stuff out there and make it look like they're building a few things and leave some place for the Israelis or somebody to come and attack. But it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen, folks, because I think I'm just not going to be able to pull it off. How are you going to do this with a population that has basically gotten out of control? You know, what they're trying to do here is get the Israelis to attack, get us to attack, get anybody to attack them at this point, because they have to rally their own people. Failure to rally their own people at this juncture in time will cause these people to continue to protest this government and perhaps violently overthrow it, which doesn't seem too far around the corner. All right, enough on that. There was something else here that I had to get to. Ah, this is a good one. You're going to love this, folks. I had to get this one all the way from France. But, like I say, sometimes the Europeans watch our news here better than we do. It's down off the AFP News Network. Once again, all articles on this show that I read here, strictly for entertainment, educational, and discussion purposes only. Nobody making a buck here, folks. Just relax. Immigration rights activists said today that deportations have jumped nearly 50% under President Barack Obama, despite a pledge by the president for a more compassionate immigration policy. A total of 387,790 people were deported from the United States in 2009, up from 264,503 under the administration of President George W. Bush, according to government figures cited by the Fair Immigration Reform Movement. Now, folks, listen here, okay? This is government figures that are cited by a Fair Immigration Reform Movement. Now, I guarantee you that this is one joker and a bunch of his buddies. A coalition of several organizations, so it's several jokers and all their buddies. We are asking President Obama for an immediate halt to deportations and to show leadership to advance immigration reform, said Angelica Salas, executive director of the Coalition for Humane Immigration Rights of Los Angeles. I love these groups. This is not sound economic policy or moral policy. This is not leadership nor change we can believe in, said Pramila Jayapal, executive director of One America, one of the groups participating. We expect more. We expect the president to order the administration to stop the deportations and demonstrate leadership on passing immigration reform. The groups at Monday's news conference plan a march on March 21 in Washington to revive efforts for immigration reform. Now, this is going to be something. When's that coming down here? Oh, Grace, we only got 14 days to that one, huh? Less, 13 days. 2 weeks down the road here. So this should be interesting. That would be a Sunday, folks. I might have to see what I'm doing that weekend and get out here and witness this. This should be funny. But it is. What do you do with this here, folks? Now, is this somebody on the right pulling off a big hoax? Is this really a bunch of groups talking about this? Now, personally, I think that each of these little groups out here, you know, which generally got four or five people in them, tops, and do obviously communicate with each other, you know, or maybe they are pissed off about something. but are they real? Now, that's the next question. I think we're going to have to do a little more research on this guy here. But I thought it was interesting here tonight to show you the lefties out there are just as PO'd at Obama as everybody else. If it is a leftist. I don't know. We may have to wait and see on that one, folks. It's pretty good. All right. Got that one. Okay. Now, here we go. This is a Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said today, a U.S. decision to allow exports of web tools to Iran was intended to allow Iranians to communicate without being blocked by their own government, which indeed, in fact, they are. The Treasury Department on Monday eased sanctions on Iran, Cuba, and Sudan to allow exports by U.S. companies of services related to web browsing, blogging, email, instant messaging, chat, social networking, and photo and movie sharing. We're supporting the right of free expression, Clinton told reporters. She said the move would provide internet tools to citizens of Iran so that they can communicate, so that they can have other sources of information about what is going on inside their country. We believe that if Iran calls itself a democracy, it should act like one, and that means respecting the right to free expression and assembly of its own people, Clinton said. And in the 21st century, expression and assembly are carried out on the internet as well as in person, she said. So we're going to continue to support those Iranians who wish to circumvent and be able to communicate without being blocked by their own government. Now, Deputy Treasury Secretary Neil Wolin said the Treasury Department's move will enable Iranian, Sudanese, and Cuban citizens to exercise their most basic rights. Lifting the ban on exports of software and services will make it easier for individuals in Iran, blah, 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 blah. The rest of this is all crap. But pretty interesting here. Now, I can't understand why they would allow companies to do business with Iran on one so that they could sell their web services over there and not allow other companies to go in there. So I think a little bit of conflict of interest going on here. Which one is it? You know, we just get done talking about sanctions against Iran. Now, I can understand trying to get the internet opened up in there. Look, good luck with that, folks. I'd like to see how you're going to pull that off. I don't think it's going to happen, to be honest with you. Look, every now and then we do hear from people that are in Iran, but it's a rare day. It's a real rare day. Maybe I don't know how the internet works all the way around the board, but the fact of the matter is, we had, for the most part, these Iranians have been shut down. I mean, there was a time here, right prior to 2002, 2003, where we had a lot of Iranians coming in and out of the rooms, and, you know, make no mistake about it, these people were Iranians. Some of them were pretty goofy. Some of them were fun. One of the most amazing things about it was we met many of them that were educated in Europe and had gone back to Iran and knew about the internet, knew what the hell was going on, you know, knew what life in the outside world was like. And, you know, we're pretty silly idiots. Fun-loving silly idiots, I should say. But still, nonetheless, we know it's been shut down because we don't hear from these people at all anymore. And I have one contact that comes through here, long-time listeners, know a guy named Abbott that I have spoken to on a couple of different occasions, and who will tell you all about what's happening in Iran. So that's, it's coming down the road here. I'd like to see this opened up. I'd like to see Cuba opened up, although I can't imagine how many people in Cuba have computers or access to the internet. Now, that could be pretty amazing. And I can't imagine the Cubans allowing this all stuff to go. So, I don't know, maybe it's just the gesture here. Could well be that we are opening up to this stuff to the world. But, the world's still got to accept it. We'll wait and see what happens down the road. At any rate, folks, we've hit the top of the hour here. It's about time to close her up. Once again, the tables are all getting piled real high with the chairs. The lights are all going dim. See the Mater D out there doing his job as always. Got everything counted up. Going to go make a deposit. Got his truck running out there. Nobody in the front seat. Must be working pretty efficient. Well, at any rate, folks, the cafe is going to close down, but the bar will always be open for a little while longer. You have listened to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com. The best in internet talk radio. Folks, we'll see you all next week. I'm
I'm going to go to the next one.